Okay, so now we're starting session two, which is on sneas or modesty. Do you want to start with questions, or should I start with an approach? I mean, anyone who's been here last year heard my approach from last year, so you already know, but anyone who's new has not heard my approach. You have a question? We'll start with that.
Okay. I'm married in June, and I do not want to cover my hair.
Okay.
So what do I do?
Well, you'll have... What do? You either cover it or you don't.
Yeah. But is it breaking some... It's rabbinic.
Okay, so it's not rabbinic. It's not rabbinic. It's a very interesting... The whole covering hair source is a very bizarre source. It happens to be that there are some commandments that are not rabbinic, but that are not written in the Torah. And they're called, like, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, a law from... that Moses got at Sinai, but it's not written. It's an oral law. It's not a written law, but it still has Torah authority, and it's not rabbinic.
Okay.
So we have a little teeny hint, which I'm sure you've heard. There's a hint of it in the Torah, which is that when the woman who's a sota, who's accused or suspected, the suspected woman suspected of adultery, goes before the Kohen, she uncovers her hair. So from there, we deduce that it's covered. But it's not like we deduce and we were sleuthing around and then we saw that women covered hair. It is an oral law that you have to cover your hair, just as it is a law to light Shabbos candles, but it doesn't say in the Torah you must light Shabbos candles anywhere. It's just law.
Does it have to be, does it make sense to wear hair that looks better than your hair would normally? I have thin hair, so if I get a sheet, though, it's like a big puffy sheet, though. It's better than what my hair looks like normally.
Yeah, I would challenge you to find any woman who prefers her wig to her hair. So, and then that's the first answer. And the second answer is that the laws of modesty, it really affects how you feel about yourself. So when you're wearing your wig, you behave differently and you feel differently about yourself, which is, even if a man doesn't know. But the truth is, men who have wives who wear wigs, they could spot a wig pretty easily as soon as their wives start wearing them. They know.
And how much do you have to cover? Like, some people just wear a hat.
Right. So I would say consult your local Orthodox rabbi. I could tell you my rabbi holds, but that's not going to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
So my rabbi is not so lenient, but he's more, he's like middle. Some people say that basically the way it works is that. It's considered secondary erva, which means that it's a social category of things that are normally covered. Erva means things that are normally covered. So you have things which are considered objective, should be covered, like your torso area, breasts and genitals, that kind of thing. And then you have things which are more, it goes by the society, like some societies the women wear socks, and some societies the women cover more sleeve, and some societies less sleeve, so it would go by that. And then there's the question of, like in America, or in most societies now, married women don't cover their hair, whereas for many centuries, women did cover their hair. Not just women, I think even unmarried, everyone covered their hair. You didn't walk out without your bonnet on in the 1800s. But now, none of us cover our hair. So the question is, does it stand or does it not stand? So we generally, in Orthodoxy, do maintain that it stands. And like all areas that should be covered, you have what's called a tefach, which is a cubic something, like a fist to make it not erva. Like at every point... it says tefach be'isha erva in the Gemara. It says that if you, in an area that should be covered, you can show up to that cubit and it's not considered revealed. But more than that, it is. So that's the source for generally like leaving some hair out. And then you have the opinions of covering heads but not hair. You know, there's different things, so you have to ask your rabbi.
Can you go back to the sota for a second?
Yeah, go back to the sota. You want to hear a shir on the sota?
I wouldn't mind a share on the sota.
Okay.
But
I'm supposed to be speaking when I come back in over the months about emunah and bitachon, but maybe we could discuss the sota one time. Very interesting topic, but yes.
Why? Okay, I hear what you're saying. Why would the sota uncover her hair in front of the Kohen?
That's actually part of the law. That's part of the.
It makes sense though, because she's still married. they're trying to deduce whether she's in fact been, you know, with another man. It's causing more immodesty.
Yeah, it is causing immodesty, and that would, it really has to do with all the different laws and all the different humiliations that she goes through in over the course of that that whole process. So she has to go through certain, there are certain things which are lessons to her and teachings to her, because acts that she has to do as part of the process. Like she drinks God's name is erased, and she drinks that.
Right.
There are certain aspects that all lessons for her to teach her things. So this is part of it. Yeah. So, what else?
Well, I have questions about covering your hair once you're married. Is there a difference between covering your hair with a shade toll versus a scarf versus a hat, or does it...
Well, so Sephardim, actually, there are many rabbis who are Sephardic rabbis who say that the wig is not okay, and that you have to do the scarf only. So that has to be extremely obvious to everyone that you're covering your hair, and that you can't. And then the Ashkenazic poskim generally tend to say, as long as it's covered, we don't care how it's covered.
What if it doesn't technically meet exactly the specified requirements of covered hair, meaning like it's only supposed to put like a fistful of
hair. Right, so let's say your personal rabbi would hold that you can only lead out a fistful and you're leaving out more.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say,
so you just go by, like, my rabbi's not telling me that it's the worst thing in the world, so I wear a hat with my hair down. But it just all depends on your rabbi. You don't have, like...
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, well, I can't say, you know, what my rabbi holds is the objective law, when I know that there are other rabbis who are more lenient.
Yeah.
So,
where did that law come from? Where did the fist of hair?
Well, that's what I was saying. So the Talmud says that a fistful, more than a fistful, is considered revealed.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's something that needs to be covered, more than a fistful is revealed. Mm-hmm. This one.
Can you discuss why it matters?
Yeah.
Why modesty matters in general?
Why it matters if this much of your hair is covered or this much of your hair is covered? Like, what does it matter when it comes down to it?
Mm-hmm. Well, back to what we were saying about the sukkah before, that there has to be a definition of something. So, like I said, 19 cubits is a sukkah and 21 is not. So at a certain point, we're going to just have to come down to, it's a matter of definition. What is considered covering? Are you asking why it's important to cover your hair, or why it's important to have a definition of what is covered?
Because it's still important.
I guess my question is, because different rabbis hold by different things, right? And, you know, in some communities, you can cover your hair with a wig. In some communities, you can't. In some communities, this and that. So when it comes down to it, no one's really following anything. Everyone's just going by whatever their...
Again, we're in exile now. And if we had, going back to our Sanhedrin, if we had a Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin would decide for the entire Jewish people what the law is. So what we're talking about now is really a product of exile, which is unfortunate, where the Jewish people can't have one standard as to what the law is. Ideally, all the Jews are supposed to be keeping the same law, and the big court would determine what that is. Yes?
Would you say that covering your hair for a married woman is something similar or like along the lines for a man, like wearing a towel as usual? Or are they completely like separate? They just both have to have marriage or tradition?
Yeah, I would say it's more basic. I mean, maybe it's time to just talk a little bit about modesty in general.
Mm-hmm.
Modesty is another one of those things that I would still say that I personally find keeping kosher more difficult than keeping modesty. And for me, many years, I was plagued with modesty. I guess as I get older, maybe I'm just calming down a little bit. But during the teens and your 20s, when you're really trying to be attractive, I guess for a lot of people it's their 30s too, but I guess I just slowed down. But when you're trying to attract men, it's very annoying to have to keep modesty. And that's what my daughter who's 14 and has a much better figure than I ever had in my life and ever will have. So she's grappling right now with this pain of you want to present yourself as a sensual, attractive woman. And that's not something that the Torah says you're not allowed to do. However, there are guidelines as to what lines you can cross and what you can't. And you want to present yourself as a sexual being. And then there's the modesty laws, which are telling you you have to hold off here. You have to cover yourself. Right? These are the guidelines. And that is certainly for a young lady who wants to be attractive, and especially in a society where so many people have a different idea of what's attractive, it causes a lot of conflict. So for many, I think that if you're in a society, going back to our 1800s, where ankles were considered like the big deal, and anyone who showed their ankles was a whore, and now, and then you wouldn't walk out with your hair uncovered, so it would be much easier to keep the laws of modesty. Although, if I recall correctly, that in that society, breast cleavage was totally acceptable. So you'd have, like, let's say you were a frum Jew and you had to cover up your breasts, and that would be very difficult for you because all the other girls are getting men by showing their breasts. So now you can't. So it's the same, you know, it's conflict, unless you're in a society where everyone is dressing the way you are dressing. And so I struggle. That's another one in terms of like what you were saying, like the difficulty and the pain. I feel that it's the same kind of a thing because it's a struggle and it's conflict. Yet at the same time, it's sort of like you're giving yourself this message: I have self-respect and I'm not dressing as a sexual being, as an essentially sexual being. And this is something that I discussed last year, that all of the strong female figures in the Torah, I would say, and all the women are strong female figures. Like all of our paradigms and our examples, our role models, were very, very proactive and very strong and made a lot of decisions and did a lot of things. If you study the stories of what the women in the Torah were like, and I think it's because they have this idea of the modesty. The modesty of the Jewish woman is held up. It's our commandment. It's our special thing that the Jewish women are modest. That the Jewish women, we have the responsibility of the sexuality, of the modesty of the sexuality, and of the modesty of our physical selves. Because men, as much as they, there is a concept of modesty for men also. The actual law, which is, it's not a law. It's from the prophets. From Micha, it says, "Hatznei alecha sim Hashem lokecha." You should walk modestly with God. So that statement is not referring to clothing. It's referring to both men and women, and it means that you should behave modestly as a person. You should not be out there trying to get recognition, trying to get people looking at you and thinking you're great, all these type of things. But for women, there's this added dimension of the physical dress. But obviously the physical dress is really supposed to be about, it's supposed to be reflected in our behavior and for men also in their behavior. It's not just about dress. And if you dress modestly but you behave indecently, then what have you really accomplished? But as much as it's difficult, I always found it very useful to me. While I was feeling constrained by the laws, I also felt that it was sort of exercising my soul in the sense that I was reminding myself that I'm more than my body. Yeah, so now what was your question?
I don't know, but it is a law, though, that you have to cover your hair, right?
Yeah, it's an oral law.
It was because I was late to the class after the break. I'm not sure if that in the Torah?
Right, so you want to review?
Sorry.
It's not in the Torah, but it's not rabbinical.
It's in the oral.
It's in the oral. It's something that Shabbat handles, is a big example.
Yeah, it's very explicit in the Talmud. So in the Talmud, it's extremely explicit, where it talks about the sota, then goes into a whole thing that when a woman is in a public situation, she has to cover all of her hair. When she's in a semi-private situation, we don't even really have this anymore. There's something called, like, let's say you're on your porch. So that's a public situation, but it's also a private situation. So then you can cover less hair. I mean, in practice, most people either cover the hair or they don't cover the hair. It's not like, and then if she's in the shuk, if she's in the marketplace, then she has to cover this much of her hair. If she's in an absolutely public place, she has to cover that, all of her hair. Like, there's different levels, and depending on where you were, then you can cover more hair or less hair. So all that is an explicit discussion in the Talmud.
How does that benefit Judaism, Jews, the world, etc.?
How does covering hair benefit specifically? Or
yeah.
So
what is the ultimate purpose of that?
Of covering hair? As opposed to modesty in general? Like, do you see that, do you accept modesty as something that benefits the Jewish people or yourself? And then do you see covering hair as an extension of that or as a separate thing?
I'm not even sure, to tell you the truth, because under modesty, covers also Kol Vaisharva, which I have like 5,000 issues with.
Mm-hmm. What's
that? Kol Vaisharva is like
woman
a woman singing is prohibited in front of men.
Right.
And to me, that's not modesty. To me, that's like completely messed up. Repression, like control of women, and just not cool at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, like when I hear about modesty issues, I'm like, okay, like, this much. But then there's always that, like, bigger question to me that's like, who really cares? Like, we live in a society, everyone around us is in tank tops and whatever, and the whole world is, like, showing their hair.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what is the... It's not... Hair is not necessarily the same... like even status of sensuality that it once was. If you have people like showing themselves in all these ways, like you just walk down 86th Street and you have Victoria's Secret and you
right.
have all the stuff. So what is the real, like, I could see like not dressing like a whore being a benefit to you, but I don't see where this much hair, that much hair. I could see like you come to shul, whatever. I could see that, but I don't see the ultimate, like, if, like, what does God really need this for from us? How does this refine us as a people more than giving charity or praying?
Well, why would it be more? It's part of a whole system of which it's included.
Why is that important? That's what I'm trying to understand.
Why
is it important?
Why is the sensuality of hair needing to be covered after marriage?
Yeah, because the fact is that if the whole thing is meant to help men...
I don't believe it's just meant to help men.
But we can't avoid the fact that part of this is meant to help men avoid being turned on by women. This is why you see in Israel that women are being relegated to the back of the bus so that religious men won't see them. This is like a whole conflict in Israel. This is like a huge dilemma that's going on right now that people are like, what kind of society are we trying to create here? So I just feel like we can talk about modesty, but we also have to understand that, like, taken to these extremes, we're talking about a whole society that's not a free society. It's not a progressive, positive society for women or for men when these things become too... I mean, are you guys here? Like, what are... Like, do you know what I mean? I just feel like we can't just talk about modesty
and all
its beauty.
I think it's always useful for me to distinguish between... people or societies or sects getting crazy strict and what the law actually is. Because it doesn't happen to be that it's prohibited to sit mixed on a bus. It's just not prohibited. So if an aspect, some sect wants to make that a law, but it's not the law, like then you're adding on to the Torah. It's just not the law. So if a man who feels that he is so nervous about his self-control that if he walks down the street he's then going to leap on a woman and sexually violate her or sexually violate in some way, so then he has to, maybe he could discuss it with his rabbi, take some strategies, work on it. I would say in general though, regarding the pants issue, yeah, but before, did I clear up anything for you or not?
Oh, well, it's going to take a lot more. But it's not personal that I'm leaving like I told you before.
So, regarding the pants issue, there would be two possible modesty problems. One modesty problem would be there's something called kli gever, which is that a woman is not allowed to wear man clothes and a man is not allowed to wear woman clothes. Pretty much, I would say that in this society, pants are designed for women, and there is not a problem with that aspect. If you're wearing pants that are women's pants, or even a lot of women wear sweatpants, you know, they're unisex, it's not a big deal. So you're not violating in terms of that. So the next question is it actually immodest? Is it immodest to show the fact that you have two legs? Like, let's say you're wearing loose pants. Is loose pants going to be a problem? So I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find that it's really forbidden if you're wearing that loose pants. I think you'll also agree that if a woman is wearing loose pants versus a woman is wearing a long skirt, the long skirt is generally more modest unless you're bike riding or something. If you're doing normal walking activities, a skirt is generally considered more modest because it gives less idea of the legs. But that doesn't mean that there can't be pants that are modest. So that's my opinion. I that's just my opinion. Yeah.
And do jeans fall in the category of pants?
Yeah. Why not?
Well, I know it does. But because of the pants, thanks for me to give up my jeans.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe you can find modest jeans. My daughter is not... she wants jeans desperately. And I allow her to wear pants as long as they're modest. So she has, like, a bunch of baggy sweatpants that she wears. And the pants that I think are modest are not anything that she would ever be seen in. So we haven't been able to find the jeans things. And the jeans are hard because, you know, that casual look where you could just throw on a sweater and boots and you look dressed and nice, and the jean skirt is just not the same look. I definitely feel that. And when I gave up jeans myself, my favorite, my personal, but this is actually a bigger halakhic issue, was my cut-off denim shorts. But those were mid-thigh, so that was a bigger problem because that was actually showing skin. And those were very painful to give up.
So in the summer, I'm sorry, when women, were we allowed to wear like flip-flops and open shoes? I'm sure ankles.
In general, I would say yes. Yeah.
What about like tight-fitted stuff? What's the rule?
So I think that that's one of those letter of the law, spirit of the law things, that as long as you're covered, back to the Talmud where it talks about, it said that the fistful is considered uncovered. It also says that the thigh is considered something that you have to cover. So that's why we generally don't show the shape of the thigh. So tight things on the thigh would be a separate problem. But in the area of the torso and arms, it doesn't say that. It's not like it's not explicit like with the thigh.
Even though the breasts are very sensual.
Yeah, interestingly enough.
What about the elbow?
So
like covering the elbow. I was taught and when I first was like getting married, like the modesty stuff. So I was studying with the Rabbitson that I guess for her, covering the elbow was important.
So I'd say for a lot of people, the elbow and the knee have the same, like, it's the limbs, so the elbow and the knee would be things that you would be striving for.
Yeah, I just sort of went with my family, the way that they handle things, so I probably will cover my elbow, especially if it's, like, Shabbos or something, but if it's hot, I mean, I just ran out of the house, and I also knew it was a girl session, but if it's just, like, casual or summer, I might wear a short-sleeve shirt.
Right.
Like, so, I mean, is there a written halakha about covering your elbow?
It's very hard to find, it's very hard to pin these rabbis down. Like, you find, like I said, in terms of the rabbinic literature, the Talmud does explicitly mention the thigh, does not explicitly mention the arm, so there is some variety of opinion on the arm.
Clavicle, which I typically will cover,
right. So generally it goes by the joints. There's the elbow, there's the clavicle, there's the knee, and then you have your fistful at each area. But like I said, there's a little more leeway with the arm because the arm is not explicitly mentioned, but the thigh is.
What about going to the gym?
In front of women or with men?
No, with men. So would you also have to then dress neckline.
I would tend to say, yeah.
And what's with the neckline? How high up do you
got your clavicle and then your fistful from that.
Okay. Is there a difference between, like, how modest you have to dress when you're single and when you're married, or if it's always...
This is just the same, the covering hair is the only additional
clothing,
thing.
It's the same.
The same.
When you go home, though, you can dress not modestly, right? You
sure.
can do whatever you want.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even around your kids, around your mother, is that all right, too?
Yeah, you may want to hit the point at a certain point with grown sons. You may want to be a little more careful. I am not up to that point. My oldest son is 2.5, and he's still nursing, so I doubt he's going to have a problem. But I would say that there's going to hit a point. With my daughter, who's fully developed, as I mentioned, there was a certain point where and she wasn't wearing a bra necessarily around the house, and I said, I just don't feel that my husband should see that at a certain point.
Right.
But up until she really, really developed, I didn't think that it was an issue. So, and even now, like for her to wear, she wears shorts around him and she wears a tank top, but I just felt like the actual nipples showing through would be immodest and inappropriate, but that's my sense. I mean,
so then, I'm sorry, but elbows, the collarbone, knees are not actually in the Torah as far as...
You mean the written law? It's not the written law, yeah. This is all oral law.
Okay.
What? Did you say, I'm not saying rabbinic, I'm saying oral law.
Sure.
There's so many, like, what's next? Everybody in Israel, nobody wears sleeves unless you go to Jerusalem and the religious neighborhood.
Right.
But, like, the typical.
I think it depends on the Datiyim, it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on the community. You're going to find, like when I was in high school and I went to an Orthodox high school, the law was the sleeves had to be halfway between the elbow and the shoulder. That was the posek of that town, that was how he held. So that was what we did. But I actually don't know the basis of that, because it makes more sense to me just that every joint and then you have the fists. That's more logical. So actually my daughter, who's been struggling with the sleeves thing, she once said to me, she's like, can I call that rabbi and ask him if I could hold by him? So I said, well, we have to call our rabbi and see if he'll let you hold by a different rabbi, because in general, when you choose your posek, you stick with that posek unless he says differently.
What's a posek?
A posek is something, as we were talking before about the problem with the exile, being that there are so many different ways to learn the laws, so the posek would be your local Orthodox rabbi that you choose his way of going with the law. And you can have a different posek for different areas of law. Like, for example, if you have a rabbi, you can call for your nida questions, your colors on your white. And that could be different than your rabbi that you ask about kashrus.
But doesn't that allow you to kind of like shop around? Like the rabbi, you like what he says about kashrus?
Well, it ends up being like if he has a specific area of expertise,
okay.
Then you want to go to the, then you might, he might say, go to the expert on that.
Okay.
But if in general, if you have one person who's competent in all the areas, you would stick with the one as a general rule. And you would pick him based on if you like his philosophy of life and the way he approaches things. That would be how you choose. Once you choose one, then you stick with him, generally. So the question is that you were counseled to keep kashrus, Shabbos, and family purity, and were not counseled on modesty with your marriage. And those are like the pillars. Yeah. And so is modesty not as important, or where does it fit into all this? And I would say that in terms of Judaism being founded on this concept of the Jewish home, in terms of the creation of the Jewish home, you need to have these three things as defining elements in the Jewish home. The home needs to be a kosher home. You need to have Shabbos every week in the family, and the family getting together for Shabbos, and the marital intimacy needs... These are the core aspects of the family, and the family is the unit of the Jewish people, as units of family. However, Judaism is also comprised of individuals. And in terms of individuals, modesty is very important in terms of a person's personal growth. So, but I would say as far as the family life, and that's what you're striving for, definitely those three are pillars, and they're very, very fundamental.
Okay. Thank you.
That's it. No more questions. We're all questioned up. Okay.